Why not?
Exactly. Who doesn't want pink eyes? Well, I would actually, I feel like a lot of people don't want, you know.
Yeah.
We'll just cut that part out.
Hey y'all, this week on Bus Ride Talks, I speak with graphic designer Shady Ray on the art and love of designing for businesses, the pain of unique names, rebranding the medical market of all things, and even sprinkle in a little bit about horses too. Let's get into it.
Hi, Shady.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you this morning? It is early. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, you know, gives me a reason to... I don't know, be a person this early in the morning.
I feel that. I'm not an early riser, so anything that gets me up before, I don't know, 9 is usually interesting.
I usually can't get out of bed until like 8 o'clock. There's like no way I can get out of bed before then. It's really a problem.
I feel like that's a reasonable hour to be okay to like not get up before then.
Not that great though, because I start work at 8:30, so I'm like really like scrambling to get ready for work every morning. But
that's always impressive to me. I have it takes me an extensive amount of time to wake up in the morning, so usually I need at least an hour if I want to be on time anywhere, and I'm never on time anywhere, so an hour is nice. That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, same here.
But we are here today to talk about you and some of the many things you do. Now, one of the things I'm excited about to have you is that you built our logo for Greatest City Collective. We've used it vastly. We're so glad to have it. And your primary work is as a graphic designer. Now, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. What does that mean specifically to you and your work?
So for me, I mean, graphic design is pretty much just my life. It's what I've really based everything around. I've been a graphic designer since I can remember. It's always what I wanted to do. That was like kind of my dream growing up. So
that's great.
Pretty exciting. But I just really love digital media, and I really love creating identities and being able to serve, you know, larger communities with artwork and putting artwork to, you know, creating a larger purpose with it and making it really functional. That's what I find really interesting about graphic design in terms of, you know, how it relates to the art world, is how it really, really is able to serve different people and serve different purposes and stand for different values and different organizations.
Oh, that's really cool. And like graphic design, I think what you brought up is so interesting, because I think sometimes I don't necessarily think of graphic design as art, but it is. It's really artistic. I mean, all of the best eye-catching designs have a good artistic base, and that's the reason that it catches your eye in the first place. But yeah, this is the first time I've heard someone say that they wanted to be a graphic designer since they were young. Like, did you, was it just like the art concept? Was there something that caught your eye when you were younger?
I was just such a nerd growing up. I was just always on my laptop, like always on my computer. And I just always really loved art. And when I downloaded, you know, GIMP, you know, that free version of Photoshop growing up, I was like in love. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So I just have always just really been drawn to it. I've always really enjoyed it. I've always loved working with people and helping people create, you know, different logos and different, you know, things for their business. I've helped my mom when she was starting her own company. So it's just always been something that's really fun for me to do.
Oh, that's really sweet. I think the most I ever did for my mom business-wise was help her pick out business cards. So you're a step ahead of the game.
That's helpful, though.
You mentioned something that you said was creating identities, and I think that's probably what you mentioned about like visually building a brand. How do you go about the process of sort of creating a brand for a business or for, you know, whoever needs your work?
Oh, there's so many things to talk about with this. So let's
get into all of them. I love it.
Yeah, so that's basically at the heart of what I do. That's what I particularly love about graphic design, or in the graphic design space, is creating brand identities and really allowing, you know, whatever organization, such as Greatest City or a different product, to really shine and stand out from the competition. So something that when building a brand or an identity, the first thing that I usually do is do just research, lots and lots of research. I feel like that's kind of undervalued in the creative space, or like in graphic design. I feel like people don't usually think, like, they're like, oh, you just like start designing things right off the bat. Like, no, I start with research and seeing
Mm-hmm.
what is in the field, what isn't in the field. Sometimes what's not showing up is just as important as what shows up in your research. So
Yeah.
kind of seeing where the empty spaces are, where the blank spaces are, and seeing what your competition is doing or the other organizations in your space are doing or what they aren't doing, and seeing how you can kind of fill those gaps or allow your organization to really shine through. In terms of a recent project I was working on, I was working on a project for a women's health drug. It was a first of its kind thing that was coming to market. It's a pharmaceutical in the pharmaceutical space, so that was in itself a challenge. And designing for the pharmaceutical space, which typically you kind of associate that with very just like white boxes, very
Very
generic
sterile.
looking, very sterile. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, there's obviously a reason that that's been done before. There's a reason that, most healthcare looks that way. It's to kind of give it that feeling of, this is a medical device. But in this case, we really wanted to come to market with something that was super different. And especially when talking about the disease state itself, it was a women's sexual health drug. So that's already something that's super stigmatized and that women don't really want to talk about. So like when they have this product or when they receive this prescription, you don't want it to look sterile. You don't want it to be like, oh, like I have to use this. Like I don't want to like, it's already a stigmatized thing. So when coming to market, I really wanted to create something that didn't feel stigmatized, that would allow the woman to feel like she was be able to take back her sexual desire and really own it in a way and make it feel a little bit more, a little less healthcare oriented and more consumer oriented, like some sort of beauty product or something in that space. So that was really important to me.
That is so cool. I think that is so, no, that's amazing because it's such a good bridge of what you talk about of like comfort, I think, in that I didn't even realize how much that aspect is. Like the thing that kept coming to mind is like I think as people sometimes we talk about like the silliness of like tampon commercials or like period products and things like that. And they are a little bit silly. And there's like a little bit of like strange stereotyping, like why are we always in white? In those commercials. But it made a big difference in like how you view those products and how you feel buying them in the store and how people feel when they go to
Absolutely.
get them.
Yeah. So it's not even just about like the commercials that, are associated with those products. It's about the product itself. I feel like, that, I think that, Always and Dove and like all these things do amazing jobs with, their marketing campaigns. Like there's so many beautiful campaigns that have like really just gone out of their way to like make strides for, women and women's rights and like sexual health and all of that, which is amazing. But I think that where we can come in with design is also, the products and like the actual touch points when those per the person like gets the product, and
Yeah,
kind of carrying that experience through.
the design of the product itself feels fun. And that's always the thing. I always feel like I've been kind of like gotcha'd a little bit when I see a product that has like a funky like design to it or like there's something about it that has like a fun design to it and I'm like, "Ooh, I want it just because it's cute." But I mean, that's fun.
That's the whole point of branding. That's the whole point of product design is, engaging with the consumer, making it interesting, giving it that extra edge,
Now, one thing that's new to me, and most of this is new to me, graphic design is definitely way out of my wheelhouse. I don't really understand how much of that works, and Photoshop and I don't get along. We don't get along. But how did you specifically get into healthcare design? Because that's something, like I mentioned, it feels really important, really useful to have that aspect, to have someone who's thinking about the consumer as sort of a consumer and not just a patient. But how did you get into that part, that line of work?
So it didn't really happen by any like in intentionally, I suppose. My the where I the agency where I currently work at now, Imrie, is mainly a healthcare marketing firm, and so that's kind of how I got into it. Although it was kind of like an interesting process, like getting into it. I never saw myself in like the healthcare marketing field. I wasn't like what I was like, oh yeah, like that's gonna
That's
be
where I
me.
want to
That's what I want to do. But I actually like have really grown to enjoy it. It feels like it gives my work a lot more purpose. Seeing how it actually impacts people in their real lives and in really real ways is super meaningful and super impactful. And hearing patient stories and testimonials about, the products or the drugs that you're working on and like how they've changed lives or how they've, really benefited them is pretty amazing. So it gives a little bit more purpose, I think, to the work that I make on a daily basis.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah, I just wouldn't have thought about how that could impact in that way. But then thinking back on all of the products that I buy and the things that you need, it does make a difference. You know, when it looks like something you're invested in, A, it catches your attention, so you actually remember that it's something that exists in your world. And B, you just feel a little better about it.
Yeah, it definitely. I think there's a lot to, destigmatizing talking about, different health disorders and different things that are going on. And I think that's a lot of what we do at Emory is like A, raising awareness for different disease states that, people might not otherwise know about. And then also, destigmatizing it and making it something that, bringing a sense of community to whatever that disease state is so that you feel more empowered to talk about it, more empowered to find solutions that will work for you.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, I know, so you work with Emory, and that's sort of your bread and butter. Do you do freelance work? Is there
Yeah, I do a lot of freelance work. Mostly my freelance work is around identity design, so doing
Okay.
different logos like for you guys are
It's a
different.
beautiful logo, y'all. We
I'm
use it
so glad you
everywhere.
like
It's
it.
such
That
a
makes me
gift.
so happy to hear. It's always a treat seeing it pop up on my feed. I'm like, oh, that's so lovely that you use it. But yeah, I do a lot of freelance work. I do mostly identity design and logos and such things like that. I work with other small brands as well to help with different web and print pieces as well. So kind of all over the place.
Well, that is a difference that I'm interested in. So there's, there's web versus print in the world. Is there, do you find that there's a difference in what you design for those or how you go about those?
Oh boy, how yes. There's a big difference. So it's kind of funny, like going to school at MICA in Baltimore, like the graphic design program really focused on print work. And so I think that my heart really loves print and designing for print, the bulk of what you do now as a graphic designer, at least in my field in particular, is web design. And for the web. So there's definitely a lot of differences between the two. I mean, the one that I find most interesting is just how people read the information. So like in a book, it's like left to right, like page to page. And so you're designing a spread, basically. If you were to design a print piece, it would be like two pages, like a spread. And that in itself is interesting. But on a, for a website, for example, you're reading vertically. So you have to create a story vertically, which is just a different way of storytelling and a different way to kind of, get the information across, which I find pretty fascinating.
No, that is fascinating. I think it's the difference of, when sometimes, so I spend a lot of time looking at scripts and the difference in how things are written, depending on if you want to read from left to right, because some writers will change the orientation. But also, I think when you look at comic panels, and the way that they move across the page. So there's always something when you change the medium and you change where people's eyes are following, it
Yeah,
makes a big
absolutely.
difference. Yeah, I
Yeah, and
think. Go ahead.
I was just going to talk about to that point how typography and hierarchy are like kind of the connection between like print and web media. So like
Oh, I love that connection.
regardless of I mean that's like the bread and butter and like the holy grail of like design in general, but it definitely helps tie together print and web because they are pretty different. But what really helps orient the reader or orient the viewer is, that level of hierarchy, that different level of typography or how, bold you make something on the page or how subtle you make something on the page. It all helps lead the eye and lead the viewer throughout what they're reading and really draw attention where it needs to be.
Yeah, when you speak of hierarchy, do you mean in terms of like information order or like is there
Ooh.
something? What does that mean?
I was talking specifically about like when you for web design, for example, there's like very strict hierarchy levels of like, this is your heading one, this is your heading two, and it's just like a different way to style the type. So, usually for your H1, it's like the biggest, boldest, most, in your face instance of the type, whereas like the body copy of the type would be just your average, whatever you want to read.
Now I know what all those
Thanks.
words mean. When you open like a new Word document, it's like heading one,
Yeah,
body
H1,
one. Now I know
H2.
what all of it means.
Exactly. It's just the level of type. So, H1 is going to be your biggest, boldest. H2 is going to be a little bit less so. H3, et cetera. And body is going to be just, what you read on
I'm gonna continue
YouTube.
to ignore that, but at least I know what it means now. So thank you, Shady.
I'm here for all of your random type glossary definition needs. So.
And we are so grateful. But I do want to talk about, so you mentioned MICA, so let's talk about the person. Let's talk about you. So you went to MICA, which is in Baltimore. Shout out to Baltimore, of course.
Yeah.
We're glad to have you. How so that's where you went to school. Are you from Baltimore, Maryland area, or?
No, so I've kind of been all over. I didn't live in Baltimore until college. I only really lived there for college and then a year afterwards. Before that, I was living elsewhere in Maryland and before that, California.
Oh, okay. So you are really, so I know you're West Coast based now, but you've come from California. Which parts do you call home now or previously?
Oh gosh, that is such a hard question. I really lived all over, so it's hard to like really pinpoint a place that I call home is
It might
technically
not be one
wherever I
place.
am now at the current moment. But I grew up in the outskirts of Bakersfield. I lived in the mountains, called well, little tiny place called Hatchby, where everybody owned horses, and there was actually four seasons there, and it was really lovely. But then we moved to Maryland, and then I went to college in
Maryland, where
Baltimore.
we don't
So
have reasonable seasons. I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry.
there's no rhyme or reason to the seasons in Baltimore. Not at
You
all.
just get like two, and then, everything else is just a mixed bag in between. Every other day is a mixed bag.
It's a surprise. Every day is a surprise.
I think it's the greatest thing. Okay, so that's cool. Did you grow up around horses? You said horses, so now I have to talk about them because I have a
Oh
horse.
gosh, now you have a horse?
I do. Her name is
That's
Faith.
so cool. Oh my
It's
gosh, I love that
crazy.
so much. I always wanted a horse growing up, but
I didn't, and here I am.
I used to ride horses. I used to do shows and stuff like when I was younger. I didn't have a
Really?
horse of my own, but when I was younger, I got first place in a dressage competition, so that was my
Oh, that's
claim
actually
to
a big
fame.
deal. That's a big deal. No, dressage is like, equestrian sports are always, they're already a very fancy and like elitist sport as it is, and dressage is like the next level of that elitism. It's so complicated. Like the whole thing about dressage, if for people who don't know what it is it's really how fancy do you and your horse move. That is the
Yep.
whole quality of dressage. It is how fancy, how beautiful do you look on a horse? How beautiful does your horse look? That is the whole thing. I never did dressage because my posture's crap. And I was actually not, so I started riding in like middle school and I didn't get a horse until after, way till college. But I did a couple of shows and like competitions. I was mostly doing jumping competitions, but
Oh, that's so cool.
I found it so hard to do those because you have to, I don't know how it was for you, but I know I remember you had to get up like super early. Like you were up with the sun to be at these competitions. And there's like 8 million people. There's horses everywhere. Your coaches are yelling at you. You have to look super proper and like in your like stuffy horse riding clothes. And your horse has to look super great. And I was just like, this is a lot for the 2 minutes that I'm going to spend doing what I need to do to get this
Yeah,
ribbon.
that's about why I stopped doing it. Yeah, it was just like a way too much, way too stuffy, and I was also like way very young. Like I was like, this is too much for me right now. Like I'm like
It's so
12
much
years old. This
pressure.
is not. Yeah, that's too much. I was so nervous, like being in front of crowds and everything. Just not my deal.
And it
Not my
doesn't matter
deal.
if you start like casually or not. Once you're in a competition, I find that people are just like, oh, this is serious. Like, it doesn't matter if it's like a novice class or like a professional class. People are just like, this is very serious and you have to take it very seriously. And I just was very bad at doing that.
I totally feel that. I mean, I haven't really been into sports at all since, so I can't take competition or,
Seriously.
that kind of thing very seriously. It's just like, this is fun for me. Like, I do it because it's fun. I don't do it because I like to compete or I'm not a very aggressive person, so I
That is
don't know.
where I'm at. I think I don't ride competitively anymore, but the coach that I work with, I think when I was on like Towson, so Towson University where I went to school had an equestrian club, and I just rode with a club and we had a competition team, and she was just like, yeah, you would never be on this team. She's like, and that's okay. She's like, 'cause you're just here to do you. And I'm like, I am, girl. I don't want to do anything else. I don't really care about the rest of these people. I'm just here because I like horses. That's it.
I love that so much.
Hey, producer Jake popping in because
Do it.
this is really interesting because I've never met anyone else that like thinks like that. So something that surprises a lot of people when I say it is I played baseball for like 14 years, and the reason I stopped in high school, like in JV, was purely because no one could just leave it. It's just a game. Everyone just took it way too seriously. I'm like, we're hitting a ball with a stick. Like, what? Why?
I feel like
Like,
that's the age a lot of people get out of sports too, because I feel like at that age, it's like, oh, like this is something I want to be like, professional at, or something I want to do
yeah.
in college, and that kind of like, I don't know, people who aren't feeling that way are just like, I just like doing this because it's fun. Like, I feel like that's kind of like the age where that cutoff happens. At least that's true
No.
for me, so.
No, I think that's definitely where those two meet, right? Like where those things start to butt heads. And it is actually, Jake, I'm really glad you popped in because I have always found that to be one of the strange aspects. And maybe it's just what happens when you stick around sports, even if you're not a competitive person, is you just bump into people who are just like, well, no, you have to like, don't you want to win? Or like, don't you want to like do this? And it's just like, nah, I'm just
Yeah.
here.
I think that's also something that just is pervasive, kind of, at least in American culture, is just this desire to win, even though there's no prize and no one's competing and there's no rules.
Right? Or like this idea, and I don't know, Shady, if you find this true in some of your other work, but I know it's definitely been true, like in sports, but in most hobbies anyways, like if you're doing something, there has to be an end result, and it has to be like a high up end result, sort of, so
Oh,
to speak.
yes. Yeah,
Yeah.
I struggle with that for sure. I feel like most artists or any creator really does, especially like, I think that's especially prevalent with social media too, and seeing everyone, post their work, on an almost daily basis and having it feel like a completed, finished piece. I think it's really hard to start creating oftentimes without that expectation of like, this needs to be a gorgeous finished piece. And that's actually something I've been working on within myself over the last year, just through like outside personal work, and personal projects, and really trying things that are outside of my comfort zone to kind of push myself to explore things I wouldn't normally do, or kind of create without expectation, so that you're not really always creating with an end result in mind.
Yeah, I wish I remembered the Twitter thread that I was reading about this, but someone mentioned the same way that you said that, like social media, because there's, social media just works so differently. And I don't know if this is ever something that comes across in your work for graphic design, because I know it's social media is more like marketing, but there's just something in that Twitter thread was about how social media, you have to be present every day, really. It's like a constant thing. You have to constantly put something out. But creating in the generation of art doesn't really work on that degree. Like it's not something, you don't necessarily have something every day to share, to put out. And you're not necessarily creating every day because you burn out really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's incredibly true, and I think that's why so many creators, I mean, everyone that I know is like, pretty much everyone that I know is like some sort of creator or artist to some degree. And I know that we talk about that frequently, is like, that pressure to create, and that feeling, feeling burnt out from that pressure, from feeling all, required almost to produce work on such a regular basis, when that's really not healthy, and it really doesn't always produce the best, the best end result.
Right? Yeah. I think I tried a brief period where it was like, write a little bit every day. And I was just like, I got so tired of it so fast. I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I definitely find that like when I'm pressing myself to create, I tend to like not enjoy the process as much. Like when I kind of just allow myself that freedom to create without expectation or without any sort of limitations, that's when I create the best work. Because I feel like when you're pressing yourself and really, hounding yourself to create something every single day, like, it can get really tiring really fast. I actually have gotten really into this idea of kind of on the same topic of solemn versus serious design. And I learned about this through Paula Scher, and she actually referenced it to another author that is escaping me currently. But she basically talks about what we're talking about right now in this idea of solemn versus serious design or art in general. You can probably apply it to whatever you'd like to apply it to. But so at, first glance, solemn and serious seem like, very similar concepts. You wouldn't really like think there's too much difference between them, but in those small nuances is really where that difference lies. And so she talks about how when she applies those ideas to solemn and serious, like solemn design is very effective, it's very, it's socially accepted, it's effective design, it's, in the example that I was talking about before, it'd be like, every healthcare design you've seen before, what you expect something to look like. So it works, it's very effective. But serious design is, something completely different. It's, imperfect. It's usually more innovative. It's, about invention and change and rebellion. It's usually like, there's nothing necessarily perfect about it. And I think in those imperfections is where its interest lies, and where that interest is. So, and she really talked about it as serious design. You achieve these ideas, these serious designs, instead of the solemn designs through play and through, the process. So I think that is where it kind of connects to what we were talking about before, where like, play and allowing yourself the freedom to experiment and really, put play at the heart of your process and at the heart of the creative process is where you get those more interesting, serious, end results.
I love that. No, that's so cool. And I think it's for me, what's nice is to hear the word serious used and applying it to using play in your work. Because I think what we usually, or I know what I usually associate with serious is that's like when you're really, kind of stiff and just in one zone, you're in one place, you're doing one thing, and not necessarily the art of play and just seeing what is innovative, what's new, what you can create in that way. So I really like that concept. Thank you for bringing that to us.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, it's something I've just been really intrigued by lately and how it like in how it relates to my own process. I've actually been trying to kind of overhaul my agency's creative process. I feel like oftentimes we can get, really bogged down in the deadlines and that, doesn't necessarily serve the creative and it definitely doesn't and in turn, doesn't really serve, the audiences. So I think where we can, improve or where how we can kind of better that is to, allow ourselves the time to play and allow ourselves the time to find those creative solutions and be really innovative and, bring new things to market.
Yeah, and not to stick on work for too long, but I think what you mentioned about deadlines is such an interesting thing because it's always the biggest pressure to me always seems to be time, right? Because there's no window of like what creativity is supposed to live in. There's no You can't really place and say, okay, like I can definitely get this creative work done, be it a design or a piece of art or, a piece of writing in a certain window. It's just not, you can have the best laid plans and it will still go awry. It takes the time it's going to take.
Oh yeah, I definitely don't think like any amount of time would ever be enough for whatever project you're working on
And I
as
think that
a
is so
creative.
true. I spoke about this in a festival that I was just doing where it's like tinkering is eternal. Someone asked me, is like, how does 4 days feel? And for the work that I do, I'm like, 4 days can be generous, but it's still four, there's still a time limit. And it's never, I've never met a writer who's told me, hey, this is done. And I don't know if I've ever met an artist who says, yes, this is done. It's not really how that goes. I don't know if that's true for you.
Oh yeah, no, there's projects I've put out in the world and, they're final and they've been published and then sometimes it will keep me up at night just thinking about all the ways I could have done it differently or all the ways that I could have improved it or could have, you know, changed something. But, you know, I feel like that's always helpful in informing the next project too. Yeah. So, yeah.
But speaking of one of your talents that doesn't have a deadline, but is really, really interesting, you on your Instagram, you have some of the most beautiful makeup designs.
Oh,
it's so, so great. Is that something you do on your spare time? Was that something you got into for fun? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I kind of just do it for fun, just in my spare time. It's just mm-hmm. something I do, like, after work or before work, usually after work, because, as I said, I don't wake up until 8 a.m. but I just really enjoy it. It's always something I've been into, but I've gotten into it in more of, like, an artful sense, I would say, like, in the mm-hmm. last, like, year or two. Something that I really like about it is that it's very tactile. I feel like... Yeah. You know, as a designer, I'm always usually working on my screen or working on a laptop or, you know, what have you. So something that I really enjoy is, like, it's a very tactile experience. So, like, you know, working with my hands is something I really enjoy. And that's why in my free time, I usually do those kinds of more, you know, traditional artworks like paintings or, you know, even just painting my face or what have you. So, yeah.
Do you find, like, an overlap between, so you paint as well, and then, of course, you know, you do the wonderful makeup you do. Do you find there's an overlap between those two? Because I've heard some people talk about it, some makeup artists talk about sort of, you know, we talk about the face as like a canvas. What is the overlap between those two things to you?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I've never been asked before.
I just make things up.
I like it. No, it's a really good question. I think the overlap is just, you know, that, you know, tactile quality, right. And then, you know, how you use the brushes, how you use, you know, different color, you know, color theory or mm-hmm. You know, all that kind of stuff. So
makeup,
I feel like all of the I was just gonna say, I think all of, like, the basic principles are kind of the same. It's just, you know, how you apply them and how you use them are different.
Makeup is just really, like, elusive to me. I never really used it. It was just not something that I was very comfortable with. So I love seeing people do it, though, because it can be so intricate. It can be really simple to the point where people are like, oh, like, you look great today. You don't have any makeup on, but of course you do. or it's, you know, it's really poppy. Some of the designs that you do, and I think it's really interesting when it gets 3D, as you said, because it is a tactile art form, but then there's some makeup that's, like, you can apply, like, different gems and, like different mm-hmm. like glitters and stuff that, like, really make it stand out in a very specific way. I just think that's so interesting.
Yeah, I think to that point too, it's really a fun way to express yourself in different ways. Like mm-hmm. at least it is for me. I know that when I first started getting into makeup, it was almost out of a feeling of necessity. Mm-hmm. And I say it was a feeling, just not because it was, because at the time I was really struggling with my skin. I was really struggling with severe cystic acne, and I felt that I couldn't present myself the way that I wanted to. And, like, while I know now I've done so much growth and so much learning that I don't feel that way anymore, and that, you know, your skin is not a reflection of who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, just part of who you are. It doesn't mean anything about who you are as a person. It doesn't mean anything about, you know, it doesn't really mean anything, to be honest.
Like, it really doesn't.
You know? So, but I feel like when I first started, it was almost like I was trying to hide myself. And so I find that in the last couple years, this beautiful shift has happened where I no longer feel like I need to hide myself or hide different qualities of myself. I, you know, genuinely love and accept myself now for who I am. And that's been the greatest, I think, shift in how I apply makeup and how I mm-hmm. Present it. It's just, I try to be more artful with it. I do it because I enjoy doing it, because I like the process of it. I like, I just like doing different creative things and kind of that, you know, expressing myself differently a little bit. So.
No, I think that's really fun. And it's such a, it can be such a hot topic, right? It can be such a different topic, especially when we speak of makeup in sort of you know, feminine based spaces and the way that it interacts with how society views women.
For sure.
And that thing like that. But I think there's room for both, right? There's And I think the way that you expressed it makes the most sense, right? Where you start from this place where it might feel like necessity. And I think a lot of people might recognize that and might feel that. And I think that's why I shied away from it in a lot of ways. It's just, I know my bad habits, right? And I know that I'm like, this is going to become a crutch for me. So I don't think I want to go that route. Mm-hmm. But it also, there's so much freedom in it. I know a lot of people feel great when they wear makeup. They get to express themselves. They get to feel really beautiful, but in a different way. They're like, you know, I'm always beautiful, but this is like, I get to have pink eyes. Who doesn't want that? Why not?
Exactly. Who doesn't want pink eyes? Well, I feel like a lot of people don't want,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll just cut that part out. I mean, a lot of people don't want pink eye.
But maybe purple.
Pink eye shadow. Maybe pink eye shadow. They would enjoy.
I think that works.
Jake's over here making a note like, yeah, we're going to cut out section.
Jake makes wonderful notes. We don't tend to cut a lot of things on this show, though.
No. In fact, that note was, maybe I'll use that as a little intro snippet. Just like, I love pink eyes, but like, just totally out of context.
I think it's beautiful. The things that we can get from the show out of context are really some of my favorite things.
I didn't expect to talk about horses today. That was a really pleasant surprise. I didn't either.
You would think that would be something, and I think I get a lot of crap from Tim on being a horse person. You would think that it's something that comes up all the time, but it really doesn't, and I always forget when it comes up, because sometimes I'll just be talking about something and I'm like, oh yeah, I need to go take care of my horse, and someone just like reels back and they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, now I have to go into the explanation because you're not gonna let me go without it.
Yeah, I feel like no one expects it. It's like a,
and I mean, you shouldn't probably.
Yeah, cats, dogs, common, horses, oh, what?
Mm-hmm. Do you have pets? Do you have pets at home, Shay?
I do. I'm a cat. Yeah, I figured. Mom. Yeah, I've got two beautiful, lovely ladies.
That really? Yeah. I want my Artemis to have a cat sibling, but I think she would drive me crazy in the space. We have a small space, and she already drives the dog crazy enough. What are your cat babies' names?
So I am an emo kid at heart, and I named both of my cats after some of my favorite pop punk songs. So we've got Stella, you know, after
Ensemble. I love that. Yes.
Baltimore represent.
It's everywhere.
And it's so good. And I've got Misery from Mayday Parade's Miserable at Best, and also kind of Paramore's Misery Business. But I just call her Miz because she's such a love bug.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, she's such a love. But I think it's funny, too, because, you know, Misery does love company. Like, she literally will never leave you alone.
So. It always works. I think it's so great, too, how the name will just, like, wrap around the person or the animal or whatever the thing it is that's being named. It took me a long time to name my cat just because I was just like looking at her, and I came up with all these beautiful names. I like looked at the adoption center and I was like, yes, I think this will be the name. And then I got her and I was like, none of these are right. None of these are right. And it was like a 9-day period where my roommate was like, you have to give her a name. She's not going to know who she is. And I was like, I don't know what to do.
I have an identity crisis. Yeah. I don't know how people name people. I mean, naming a cat is,
I think about that all the time.
Very difficult.
No, and your name is so cool. Either. Your name is Shady. Is that like, is it okay if I ask if that's your real name? I'm sorry.
Yes, everybody does. It is, yes, my real name. It's actually a family name. It's my grandma's surname. But my dad thought it would be more unique if it was an I at the end instead of a Y, which mm-hmm. is true, yes, but usually just results in a lot of misspellings and mispronunciations. Oh,
yeah. We can get into both of those things, Shady.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. I think the best thing about having a unique name is that you don't run into it a lot, and people, you know, it becomes a really easy talking point, which for me before, when I was really socially awkward. Yes, right? It's just like, people are just like, ooh, that's an interesting name. And I'm like, yes, this is the small talk I can deal with. This is easy. It's routine. It's good to go. You're right there.
Yep. I used to be a server at a restaurant, actually. And so, you know, it was always interesting going up to people and being like, mm-hmm. hey, my name's Shady. I'll be taking care of you. And like, I would get one of two reactions, one of them being like, just taking it back, like, wait, what is your name? Like, what did you say? Mm-hmm. And then the other one being like, they would just be like, make some sort of joke, like, oh, you must be such a shady person, and thinking they were the most hilarious.
I imagine the first was probably better to deal with.
Yeah, it's funny because I got it, literally every single table I would wait on would have, like, one of these two reactions, so I ended up just going by Katie because I was like, I just can't deal with this anymore. need a normal name that sounds somewhat similar to, like, my name, so I would know if I was being called or be like, you know,
this yeah, is... Yeah, so you can hear it. I think that's so funny, the way that people take on different names, and I wonder... I guess that might not come up for people with sort of more common names. Jake, chime in if this has been your experience. But I do, you know, when you have a name that people like either mess up a lot of the time or they just sort of can't seem to get right, or you just don't want to deal with the explanation that comes with like the name that you have, like you did, Shady, you just like come up with a different name. Every time I go anywhere that has something under my name, my partner has to ask, it's like, is it under your first name or your middle name? And I'm like, my middle name, because my middle name is Janae.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to answer your question, it's even interesting in my case, because, like, mm-hmm. I have, like, the most common, like, white boy name. It's yes, really, like, it's do. Prevalent. But everyone, especially people who don't know me but decide to try to guess my name,
ooh,
or people who I've only met a handful of times and can't totally remember it, will call me Zach.
Pretty much, I could see it.
Like, eight times out of ten, it's always, like, it's either Jake or it's Zach.
You do look like Zach a little bit.
Silly.
Well, the funny part about that is when my mom was pregnant, the entirety of that time period, she was like, his name is Zach. And then as I was born and they were giving her, like, everything to sign and whatever, she looked at my name, and my last name is Zarenko, and she was like, that's too many Z's. So she changed it to Jacob at the last second, but I guess like Zach just stuck.
You would have been last on every roll call.
Dang.
So yes, I was never line leader in elementary school, and it still makes me sad.
That is
sad. But I started to take that with a lot of pride, and when I graduated from Towson, I almost got a little bit angry because there was finally someone in that entire class that had... it was like the fourth letter of their name was like a something else. Like they were technically after me, so I was second to last.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I swear to God, if I don't get called last, if I'm not the last name said, because I just got so used to it. And there's also this really weird sense of satisfaction when you go up being last and like everyone claps, and you can say it's because everyone loves you, but it's because it's over. And you just get that, like, second hand. But yeah, I mean, as far as, like, my first name, it's just that kind of slip up. But as far as my last name, constantly mispronounced, or people see the Z and they're like, I don't know what to do with this. like, they don't even want to try. But
I very much feel that. My last name is Jahelka, and, like, I usually mm-hmm. just go by my first and middle name because it's easier. It sounds a lot cooler, honestly. But, like, people will look at my last name and they'll, like, give up halfway through pronouncing it. They'll be like, not even gonna try.
Yeah. I don't know. I wear that one with pride, though, because I learned, like, a couple years ago that my name is a typo of an Americanization of a name. So
what?
I'm the only Jacob Zarenko alive.
What?
Yeah, so that side of my family is from what's now Lithuania. And so when they came to the U.S., it was Zarenkaitis. And when they got here and Americans were like, that's too hard, it was changed to Zarenko. So the Z or the A and the E were flipped. And my grandfather was a typo in the birth certificate where they switched the E and the A. So then that became my dad, my aunt, and my last name, but everyone else's is different.
Oh, wow. That's so fascinating.
So, like, I learned as much as I was annoyed by it all for, like, most of my life, when I learned that in high school, I was like, it's pretty cool.
It's so interesting the way that you come into names, you know? It's different. It's different every time, and it's interesting with the way that you choose names. Because Shady, you do go by Shady, right? And it is a really cool combination. It is an incredible combination. I think it fits you so well. But sometimes the reasons are just so simple. Like, it's not necessarily the only word that I can think of, and I'm sorry, because it's not necessarily like a design choice. It's just like, well, this has been getting on my nerves, so I'm just going to switch it.
Yeah, exactly. I've actually been toying around with the idea of like spelling my name with a Y just to kind of cut down on the amount of misspellings lately, but I don't know.
Oh, don't do it. It's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. I could talk about so many other things, but I do want to give you the chance to talk about Planned Parenthood, which is the organization that you chose today. And honestly, I think hearing from you in the line of work that you do, I feel like I really, you know, Planned Parenthood is such a big organization. Everyone mm-hmm. kind of knows it in some sort of way, but it's specific to people in a lot of different ways that I think we don't get to hear about often. And now knowing a little bit more about you, I can kind of see the threads of like the choice that you made. But do tell us why Planned Parenthood for you, and sort of, you know, what Planned Parenthood means to you specifically, if you want to get into that.
Yeah, so I mean, I chose Planned Parenthood specifically just because I love their mission. They've helped me out specifically, like personally. I have ties to Planned Parenthood. They really provide, you know, oftentimes immediate access to care that people might not otherwise have, and that was, you know, specific to my case as well. I mean, I think they're just amazing. They really give people a chance to, you know, have that healthcare and have that education that they might not otherwise have, especially in communities that are underserved as well. I love that they have, you know, their mission is to provide sex education, which I think is severely lacking in our society currently. But yeah, I mean, I think they've helped out so many people. I think that something, you know, people don't usually talk about is just the personal impact. I know so many people who have, you know, been helped by Planned Parenthood for, you know, very small reasons to, you know, very large reasons. And they are there, literally there for you, you know, for every in between. So just knowing the personal impact that they've had on my life and on, you know, people that I really care about is just, you know, really amazing that they are always there when you need them.
Yeah, Planned Parenthood does so much great work in so many across so many different aspects. Like, it truly is healthcare in so many ways and for so many people. So we are really excited at Greater City Collective and Bus Ride Talks to be able to talk about Planned Parenthood a little bit. They'll be part of our April organizations that we're supporting. So 90% of any donations we make this month will be split among Planned Parenthood with the other three. Yes, that's the math. Organizations that we have for the rest of the month. You all can check out more about that on our website. And honestly, even if you feel like you know Planned Parenthood's mission, it's always good to just take another look and see what they do, because it might, you know, beyond just being able to help Planned Parenthood, they might be able to serve you. So it's worth taking a look at and getting to know them a little bit better. But Shady, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for all of the things that you taught us, all of the things that you were able to share with us. It was really great to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation. This was so much fun. I learned a little bit about the both of you, which was lovely. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's always good to talk about horses. Now we can just do it all the time.
I'm here for it.
So next week on Bus Ride Talks, we are going to have Aldo Ambran, who is coming to us from the border cities of El Paso, Texas, and Ciudad Juarez in Chihuahua, Mexico. So we're going to talk a little bit about that for sure. We're going to talk about the writing that they do, and we'll see what we get into next time. But for today, thank you, Shady, again. Thank you. And thanks to y'all for listening.